This is an interview with John Simpson. This is May 10th, 1984. He's here for his 50th class reunion. It was the class of 1934. We're interviewing in the Red Gym, and my name is Laura Smale. You were born in Endeavor, Wisconsin.
Yes.
And your father was a doctor, you
yes.
said.
Yes.
You probably always expected to come to college, is that right?
Right. Yes, I always expected to come to the University of Wisconsin. And so when I finished high school in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, I simply enrolled at the university in a pre-med course. I was here 2 years in pre-med, but then I wasn't interested in becoming a doctor, so I stayed out of school for 2 years and worked, and then when I came back to school in the fall of 1931, I transferred over to the engineering college and majored in mechanical engineering.
What work did you do while you were out?
Well, I worked in a garage in Sturgeon Bay. The Dodge dealer up there was an old friend of the family, and they always gave me a job whenever I wanted one.
And why did you decide on engineering and mechanical engineering?
Well, because I was always a pretty good math student, and it seemed like that was much more to my liking, and it turned out to be just that. So, the 3 years then in engineering school were most interesting. In the early 30s, when everything was getting real tough. So on graduation, I was just fortunate enough to be selected for a job by a good company, American Standard, in Detroit. And I went to work for this company and spent my whole lifetime at it, living in various cities because it was a national company. So during that sojourn, I lived in New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Detroit, St. Louis, Kansas City. I guess I mentioned Chicago, did I?
No.
Anyway, I lived there. But I ended up back at home office in a very fine job in Detroit. And it was there that I finally retired.
Did you have very good grades in college? Was that why you were the person that was hired?
I wasn't the top man in my class, but I was a pretty good student. I was a good student, but we often laughed about things like that. It all depends on the person that's interviewing seniors. What he decides to do, why he picks one man and not another, is always a mystery. But I was offered this job and I took it.
You don't know why he picked you?
No, except that he said that I was the guy he wanted after the interview. It was kind of funny during the period that he came out here. He was the manager of the Milwaukee office of the company that he represented. And he came out here three different times before he made a selection. In fact, the last week when he was here, he had to get me out of the lake swimming twice to talk to me. And then he offered me the job, and I took it, and that was a very good connection as far as I was concerned.
Well, let's turn to some of these questions. Do you remember the day you came down to Madison? Well, when you
just,
first started?
Just offhand, though, of course, my father drove me down here, and he took me down to school, and I had an older sister that was already in school here. She was in the class of 29. And so he had two kids down here at the university for a while.
Hmm.
Then my younger sister came along later, and she was in the class of 1936. And so he had two here at that time.
Do I infer from the fact that he was a doctor that there was no particular financial problem for you?
There were no particular financial problems prior to the Great Depression, but we did have to watch things a little bit in later years like all doctors at that time, we didn't have a built-in collection agency like the Blue Cross or something like that. His income was from people who paid, and if they couldn't pay, it was just no income. So we didn't hurt any, but nevertheless, we were frugal, and we lived pretty well, I would say. my sisters and I were permitted, like the girls joined a sorority and I joined a fraternity, and everything was pretty good. We didn't have to really worry about anything. What's up? What else should I say?
So you didn't have a job?
I didn't work here in school, no. I didn't work during school. I worked summers, always worked summers up in Sturgeon Bay, either in a summer resort or in this garage that I'm talking about, where I would always accumulate a certain amount of money living at home during the summers.
Well, you didn't move into the fraternity right away.
No, we couldn't at that time. It was the second year before we could move into the fraternity house. Mm-hmm. And of course, we had built this new house up on Henry and Langdon, which is still in existence today. It's the same fraternity.
I'm not sure whether you named it on this second year.
The Chi Phi is Chi Phi. Mm-hmm. The fraternity is Chi Phi.
Did you know you wanted to be in that fraternity?
No, it was a result of rushing week as a freshman. And I was invited to join, and I did. Turned out to be a very congenial bunch of fellows and a good fraternity, I think. Always happy with it. Then when I came back to school after being out, and we were in the Depression days, a cousin of mine and I, who was an instructor in the engineering school, got an apartment. And so we kept our own apartment then for that year and a couple of years afterwards.
Hmm. Why did you do that?
Oh, it was an economy measure. It cost less money. I still kept up my membership in the fraternity, but I did not live in the house. Mm-hmm. And
you went out shopping for groceries and...
Well, we could. We did. We could prepare meals there, and then we ate out, or we prepared our meals, whatever we wanted to do. It was certainly an inexpensive way of spending a year in college. And worked out very well.
Well, were there grocery stores on State Street? I'm curious.
Oh, sure. There were all kinds of grocery stores on State Street and markets on University Avenue. This apartment that we had was located on the corner of Francis and University Avenue in a triangular building, and it's still there today. I saw it this morning.
Oh, yes, I know the one you mean, of course.
405 North Francis, I think, was the address. Yeah. So that was our apartment building until I graduated.
And you too knew how to cook.
Well, we learned, you know, what we always said, anybody that can read can cook.
What about things like laundry? How did you get laundry?
Well, we sent our laundry home in those days. Uh-huh. Each one had a laundry case, and we would send it home to have the laundry done at home, and it would come back through the mail. Mm-hmm. That was easy.
You took the pre-med course. Would you like to talk about the faculty that you remember, courses that you liked or that you didn't like?
Well, I, as a pre-med student, I took math courses, and I had to take chemistry, and I had to take physics. Mm-hmm. And those were my very strong points in the pre-med course, and that was what prompted me to transfer over to engineering. I preferred them to foreign languages, although I had to take German and French, and I did. And my preference was for the technical aspects, and that's what prompted me to turn over to engineering.
Mm-hmm. Were there any unusual teachers that you particularly liked that you remember?
Well, in the engineering school, the professors there, especially the department heads, were all very high-class people. Chairman of the department at that time was Gus Larson, who was a very prominent engineer throughout the United States. And he helped most of the students find jobs recommended places for them to go. He was the one that recommended that I take this job at American Standard when it was offered me. One gentleman who is still with us is Ben G. Elliott. And he was what we call a professor of thermodynamics. And he succeeded Gus Larson as chairman of the mechanical engineering department. And he was a brother of the man that was president of Purdue University. So he came from a very big family, this Ben Elliott. And as I say, he's still here today.
Did you get to know him?
Oh, sure.
Personally?
Sure. Took courses from him. Yeah, he was the instructor.
What kind of a teacher was he?
Good teacher. He was a very practical man, practical engineer, and he was especially interested in the big power plant business. And that was one part of the business that I was very interested in after I went to work at American Standard. In fact, that was my last job as manager of the power apparatus department at American Standard. So that Ben Elliott had a great deal to do with my becoming interested in the big power plant business. Whereas Gus Larson, the chairman of the department, was more heating and ventilating and air conditioning. And he did serve a year as national president of the American Society of Heating and Ventilating Engineers.
Did you have social gatherings with your faculty members?
Not particularly. I don't recall any.
Didn't go out to their house?
No. I don't recall ever visiting at the home of a professor at that time. There just never was any.
And the department didn't have department picnics or... You know, this is common in quite a few of the departments.
I know. I don't think that... I don't recall any. I don't recall any of them. Might have been some, but I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Classes in the engineering school were certainly most informal. When I was a pre-med, instructors and the professors always addressed me as Mr. Simpson. Again, in the engineering school, it was just plain Simpson. Everybody went by his last name. Many times we called the professors by their first name, as you notice, like Gus Larson and Ben Elliott and Pat Hyland. They were all professors, and we knew them by their first names. They get, in private, they would get to call us by first names, too. But in classes, it was just last name, address. See, I've already told you of the wide reputations of some of the professors in the engineering school, which always made me very happy to be a graduate of the University of Wisconsin in later life, because everybody throughout this nation knew of the engineering school at the University of Wisconsin.
You're moving on rather quickly through this. I'd be interested to know, for instance, how much homework you did have at that time.
Well, of course, everything was homework. You just go to school for classes. We had laboratories, of course, and a lot of experimental work in the engineering college, but work was all homework, study.
Could you or did you need to go and talk to professors, go to their offices and ask them about something you were doing or a grade?
Not that I remember. It was a case of preparing the regular assignments that they gave out and making sure to keep up to date with the work.
Mm-hmm. What about the equipment you had for your lab work?
Well, we had pretty good equipment out there in the engineering school because the new mechanical engineering building was opened in the fall of 1931, which was the year I entered the engineering school. And we had very good steam and gas experimental equipment out there. We had refrigeration. We had a foundry. We made patterns. We made castings. We had machine shop. We actually completed a finished product there in our courses of shop. And this new mechanical engineering building opened in 1931. It was just the latest thing in college laboratory facility for any engineering school anywhere.
I'm curious if I have gathered that many of the people who went to engineering college would not have been so well off, and one reason would have gone there in the hopes of getting jobs. Were you aware of a class difference? Were many of your fellow engineering students in fraternities?
Yes, they were. We had all groups. I would certainly say that I was not one of the wealthy, nor was I hard-pressed.
Mm-hmm.
We had very wealthy boys in the engineering school.
Mm-hmm.
From prominent families, and we had others there that were actually earning their own way completely.
Mm-hmm. The feud between the engineers and the lawyers was, what was the basis of that?
Well, that was always developed because the main engineering building was directly across the campus from the law school on the upper campus. So between classes, the engineers and the lawyers would get out on the steps and yell at each other.
What did they yell?
Well, the lawyers would always yell, "Crawl in your holes, you cellar rats," or something like that. And then the engineers would think of something equally insulting to yell back. And then, of course, we always had the St. Pat's Parade in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyers always wanted to throw rotten eggs during the parade, and so the engineers always had to defend the position, and it got to be quite a hassle that one day a year,
mm-hmm.
the St. Pat's Parade. But then the engineering school moved out to the present location on University Avenue and Breeze Terrace.
Yeah.
And so that feud between the lawyers and engineers, I think, probably disappeared. I don't know that it's
yeah.
here today.
You had finished talking about the rows between the lawyers and the engineers, and you've had a chance to look through some. Try again.
Okay.
Have you found some other questions that interest you?
Well, not particularly. I'm looking over this piece of paper. How did I spend my leisure time? One thing in the engineering school, one doesn't have too much leisure time.
I've heard that.
There's a lot of hours to put in, and there were always certain things to do. Certainly the fraternity parties were always pleasant to go to. I enjoyed them.
And did you have dates?
Oh, sure.
How did you meet the girls?
Oh, it just seemed one thing or another. You meet girls from the sorority across the street or any other place. I don't know.
It wasn't a problem.
No, it was never a problem.
Uh-huh.
I was there, although I'm still an old bachelor. I never got married to anybody.
Oh.
I never wanted that kind of responsibility.
Did you go to the Union dances? You know, there were dances at Memorial Union also.
I don't remember any. I remember going to one prom in my whole career here. I just went to one prom, but that was quite a big deal.
So you would dance at the parties?
Oh, sure.
And did you drink?
Well, that was Prohibition time. We weren't supposed to be drinking, of course, but we had bathtub gin in those days.
How did you get that?
Well, certain boys and girls all had access to a certain amount of alcohol, I guess it was, and I never did any bootlegging myself, but we had them here on the campus. We had speakeasies, too, and I never was one to frequent them very often, but I have been there. I was never one that ever got drunk at any one of them, so we had, that wasn't always the case with some of the fraternity brothers.
Did they get drunk sometimes?
Oh, sure. Drink too much. Young kids drink too much.
Was your fraternity one that went in very much for hazing and?
A little bit. There was always a certain amount of that before initiation, but it wasn't excessive. Nothing that would ever get talked about or where the university would have to take action on it. Some of them were. We never had any problems.
Did you read very much?
Well, of course, I had to be.
But besides your,
I would say not a great deal. It wasn't time for it.
Did you take any courses in history or English? Or?
I had to take English course. Everybody had to take an English course, but I took English courses and language courses when I was a pre-med. But then after I got into engineering school, there was none of that. No more electives of that type. No more. Thing was all the technical aspects of the course.
Well, what about, I'm just trying to find out, you mentioned leisure time, you said you didn't have much, but if you had any, would you have listened to the radio or?
Well, that was what we had. We had a radio, and one could listen to a lot of good radio programs in those days. I don't know the, I think I was trying to think of some particular programs I can't think of.
Lone Ranger.
Well, I guess that was in there. And, well, there was the Fred Allen program, and Jack Benny, the Fred Allen and Jack Benny feud took place in the early 30s, and that was always good fun to listen to. And, of course, the football and basketball games were broadcast by radio, most of them.
The Wisconsin games?
Yeah.
Ah. Did you go to those? I mean,
I always
physically?
I always went to all of the football and basketball games because we had the coupon books, which for a very nominal sum at the beginning of the year, one could buy a coupon book which would entitle him to admission to all of the athletic events of the university for that particular year. And I always had one of those, so I never missed any football games at home. And traveled to a couple of them outside, road games, as we call them. Minneapolis for the Minnesota game, and I went to Iowa one time for an Iowa game. And after I graduated, a couple of the football players became my very good friends, like Dick Hayward and John Schneller, who played on the most successful team Wisconsin had during my era, the 1932 Badgers, when Doc Spears came here to coach. And Wisconsin had a very successful season, capped by a win over Minnesota, when Mickey McGuire scored 3 touchdowns, and I'll never forget it. so Doc Spears had kind of turned things around here, but apparently in later years it didn't last too long. He had too much of a conflict with Doc Meanwell, the celebrated basketball coach that Wisconsin had at that time.
Did you know about that?
Oh, sure. That feud went on in great shape between Spears and Meanwell, and finally the university just decided to get a new football coach and a new basketball coach, and it did.
How'd you all feel about that?
Well, I was out of school by the time that happened, and I always admired Doc Meanwell because he was a fine basketball coach, and I think they had made him athletic director when George Little left. George Little was the guy that was instrumental in building our field house. And that was opened in the fall of 1931, brand new, and it cost $300,000. And a couple of years ago, I heard an interview at a basketball game between some announcer and Elroy Hirsch. And he was complaining because the field house was so old. Just a mere 50 years old, that's all.
It must have been a godsend at the time.
Oh, yeah, because you see, prior to that field house, the basketball games were played in the little old red gym where, as I guess the most they could seat was 2,500, and the students were, the coupon books, I think, were divided up into four groups, so that each coupon book was entitled to 1/4 of the basketball games. And that's the way they distributed the seats to the students, because they couldn't begin to give each student a seat for every game. Mm-hmm. When the field house was open, then that changed, and then we could go and see all of the basketball games.
What about you? Did you do any kind of physical?
Well, I took what we were required to take in gym, but as a university athlete, I was never good enough at any one sport to make any of the university teams. I used to play touch football with the fraternity team and things like that, but another for varsity sports, I was never good enough.
Skiing or anything like that? I don't mean team, I mean yourself.
No, I didn't do any skiing here, although we had the ski slide here, and quite a few of the people used to go off that ski jump. As a surveying course, we had to determine the slope of that ski slide. That was one of the projects. We had to run the levels up and down that ski slide.
Yeah. Where was that?
That was right over here by the hydraulic laboratory, just off from Science Hall, at the end of Park Street.
I see, I didn't know that.
Well, there was quite a ski jump there. That was always quite a challenge for many students. They're going to go off that high jump. And of course, the end of it was all out on Lake Mendota. It came right down, so we had to make sure we had ice on the lake before you could start doing ski jumping. And then, of course, there was ice boating on the lake. That was a great sport because we had plenty of wind, and Lake Mendota always froze over completely. And that was a real fast sport. I enjoyed ice boating immensely, more than sailing when the water was open.
But what were your, did you read the Cardinal?
Oh yes, every morning. We always had a subscription to the Daily Cardinal, and I had some very good friends at the time that were interested in the Cardinal, and some of them actually became editors. I can think of a guy by the name of Gene Duffield, who became a very popular journalist in later life. He was editor of the Cardinal at 1 year. And I believe Roy Matson was editor of the Cardinal 1 year. And he then became a publisher of the Wisconsin State Journal, I think it was. So
so that the cardinal was always a must for every morning at the breakfast table.
Mm-hmm. And you, this was a time, the 30s was, of a very active peace movement. There was a lot of activity on the campuses. What do you remember about that?
I don't remember too much about it. I know that I never took ROTC because it was not required here at Wisconsin. And I always regretted that I didn't take it. But it wasn't required, and so I just passed it up. Quite a number of my friends did take 4 years of ROTC and end up with a reserve commission, so that when World War II came along, they were right in the thick of it with high commissions. I had very good friends that got all the way up to colonel, and then I think the most esteemed military man we had was Bill Van Ryzen, who got to be a lieutenant general.
Oh.
He was in the class of 35 one year after me.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Van Ryzen was a lieutenant general in the Marine Corps.
For having taken ROTC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a graduate in mechanical engineering besides.
Did you know Jim Filamonte?
No, I didn't. No, I
you
don't
know who he is,
name.
I suppose.
No,
well,
I don't. No.
He teaches civil engineering now. He's a professor of civil engineering.
Well, of course, you see, this is 50 years later.
Well, yes, but I mean, he was the class of 35, or he was here.
Well, he might have been. The only civil engineering professor that I had anything to do with was Ray Owen.
I mean, he was a student. A student then.
Oh, he was a student?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the reason I'm asking is that he described an incident of throwing a communist in the lake. Did you ever do anything like that? Do you remember
it.
That?
I don't recall it, but there was a lot of talk of communism here. It was especially true of some of the professors. It seems at that time that we thought at Wisconsin we had a lot of Reds, as we call them. But I never encountered any of them, and none that ever bothered me. There was always this great equalizer that some of these professors thought they were going to have for this country, and that they thought communism was the answer, I believe. That's the way I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
The way I remember it. It vanished, I guess, though.
And the New Deal was going on here, and Hitler was coming to power. Do you remember when he was a student?
I can remember the election of 1932 when Herbert Hoover came to Madison and spoke at our new field house. I can still remember the automobile caravan that went out University Avenue with the Secret Service men hanging on the side of this open car while President Hoover was riding in the back seat as they escorted him out to the field house in an open car, something that he wouldn't dare do today. But the election went to Roosevelt overwhelmingly, and that was the end of Hoover's presidency.
What was it like hearing him speak? What kind of a speaker was he?
Hoover was a good speaker, oh yes. Although I think Roosevelt had him on oratory. But Hoover was a good speaker. He was a great man. Hoover lived to see any of the blame that was heaped on him for the Great Depression vanish. And President Truman used him to a great extent, you know, in reorganizing the federal government. So that I think Herbert Hoover was one of our really great presidents. Too bad he only had 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That 1932 was quite a year, because one could get a haircut on State Street for 15 cents. And it was pretty rough. Taxi drivers would pick up anybody and take them for 15 cents. Played havoc with the city buses, because the taxi drivers had to make some money too. That was 1932 and 1933. It was real rugged. Where are we going now? myself with any church here at the university.
I think one role they seem to have played was to be a place where people could go who didn't belong to fraternities.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true.
Sort of a meeting place.
Yeah.
Did you feel, were you aware of the difference between the fraternity group and the non-fraternity group?
I never was personally, but I think there was some feeling around here, but it never bothered me. Some of my best friends were non-fraternity men. Fraternities had a tough time there during that depression. Many of them had to go off campus because we just couldn't hack it financially anymore.
You mean leave their houses?
Yeah. Well, some of those big mortgages out there were simply foreclosed. You know, they couldn't pay them. It was really tough.
But yours got along.
We struggled through.
How did you manage it?
The reason we managed it was because Wild Bill Kiekhofer was a member of the fraternity, and he could handle the economy, the economics of the thing. And I think some insurance company that he was a director of, he got them to take the mortgage.
See, I've never heard that about him.
Well, you know, it was funny. Speaking of Wild Bill Kiekhofer, before the Yale-Wisconsin game in 1947 at New Haven, the Alumni Club of New York had a big Wisconsin party. And the main speaker was Jim Farley, but the speaker provided, along with President Fred, was Bill Kiekhofer. And his oratory was just out of this world. He was the greatest when it came to oratory. So he spoke, and then Jim Farley had to follow him. And he says, "How can I follow anything like that professor?" It was so funny.
Can you convey what it was that made him? Did he gesticulate, or was he funny?
He was so articulate that it was almost indescribable. And I never took econ from him, because I never had to. But his econ lectures were just the greatest thing that was happening in this university at the time. And it was for that they had the wall up here that was always painted, Kiekhofer's wall, every Halloween. I think that was at Francis and Langdon Street. I don't know what's there now, but there was just a wall there at that time. So it would always be painted white.
And why was it Kiekhofer's wall?
He owned the property, I think.
Oh, I see.
I think he owned the property.
Well, now, Glenn Frank was considered to be an orator.
He was just about as great as they could come to. Glenn Frank was just a tremendous speaker. And I always admired him. In fact, I got a big kick out of that book that was written years later, entitled The President Wore Spats, because President Frank was so immaculate. He'd get out of his university limousine up at Bascom Hall with his spats and walk up the steps, and you knew that he was just the best dressed man in the world.
And you were proud of him.
I enjoyed him very much. I was sorry to see him go. It was a political deal, I guess. I was gone by the time he finally was ousted from the university. And then, of course, he ran for the Senate, you know, and was killed in that auto accident while he was campaigning for the election of, I believe it was 1940. But Glenn Frank was, in my estimation, a very fine college president. And then in later years, one of my fraternity brothers and good friend became president of this university, John Weaver.
What kind of person was he?
I was talking about John Weaver.
Yes.
John Weaver's father was a professor here at the time, and So he was an unusually good student, I would say. So I'm not surprised that he was able to rise so high in the academic world. I think he came here, he was president of the University of Missouri before he was offered the job here at Wisconsin.
Did you go on being friends with him?
Well, our paths have never crossed since I graduated. I don't remember ever seeing him again after I left school. Our paths just never crossed.
Yeah.
And,
good night.
He watched over the students. he watched over the students pretty carefully.
Did you think about it as...
It never bothered me that I was never concerned with getting on the dean's list or anything like that. It didn't bother me what Dean Goodnight did.
So he didn't really play, he wasn't anybody that you...
No,
I
would say he was a right fellow, right good fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And, I only met the man once when I first came down here because we had a football player from my old hometown by the name of Butch Lytle. And he introduced me to the dean. And that was my only experience with Dean Scott Goodnight. All the time I was in school, I never had any problems. It made me remember things that I had forgotten years and years ago.
Do any others come to your mind when, as you say that?
Not particularly. I can remember graduation was held out in the field house, as it always was at that time. And the unusual thing about that in 1934 was that we had a Democratic governor in Wisconsin. His name was Schmiedemann, and we hadn't had a Democratic governor for years and years, but he got in on Roosevelt's coattail. He was elected in 32 with Roosevelt, so he was the governor, and he spoke at our commencement exercises out in the field house, along with Glenn Frank. They feuded pretty well.
How, in what way?
Oh, mostly over the university budget. Mm-hmm. See, Glenn Frank was always after more money from the legislature, and of course it was pretty hard to get the kind of money that he wanted out of the legislature. That was the big problem, I guess.
Do you feel that Wisconsin prepared you well for what you went into subsequently?
Oh yes, it was for the business connection that I made right out of the university. I couldn't have asked for a better course, better major than mechanical engineering.
Mm.
That was just the requirement of this company that I joined. So it turned out very well as far as I'm concerned. If I had it to do over again, I'd do exactly the same thing. Wouldn't hesitate.